Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Can everyone hear me okay? Good, thank you. My name is Robert Montgomery. I'm the chair of the panel this afternoon. Welcome to the Wollongong Local Planning Panel. This is a panel which is constituted under New South Wales planning legislation, and the purpose of the panel is to provide to facilitate a public hearing, which is what this is, of course, and to provide independent decisions on certain applications that come before the council. The panel is independent of the council and is comprised of three experts in their fields and one community rep. Just tell you a little bit about my background, and then I'll ask each of the panel members to introduce themselves as well. I'm a town planner by background, have some 35 to 40 years experience in local government, state government and private practice planning. I've also specialised in community engagement, mediation and dispute resolution over probably the last 20 years or so. And for the last 14 years, I've been operating my own private planning practice. Scott.
Yep, that works. Thank you, Chair. Scott Lee is my name. My background is town planning. Over about 30 years now, a lot of that time with local government, various local government areas. I now run my own private consultancy firm, have done for the last 8 years. I'm based up in the Southern Highlands.
Stephen?
Yes, I'm Stephen Lehman. I'm a registered architect and town planner. I suppose it's been about 40-odd years since I started practice. I have my own consultancy business in Sutherland Shire.
And Tina?
My name is Tina Christie. I'm a planner. I am the community rep on this panel. However, I do have a planning background. I've been working in local government for 27-odd years. I'm now in a private company, and I'm also an accredited mediator.
I'll just ask each panel member to confirm that they have no conflict of interest with any of the items tonight.
No conflict.
No.
No.
No conflict.
And no. Just for your information, the panel will sign a declaration before the end of the night, which confirms that none of the panel members have any conflict of interest, and those declarations form part of the public record. Okay, there's three items on the agenda tonight. We actually don't have anyone registered to speak other than applicants who are attending to provide us with information should we require it. So I won't go through all of the housekeeping on what we expect of applicants and submitters. I will tell you, though, that the meeting's being audio recorded for the public record. So when you do come up and speak to us, please speak clearly into the microphone so your voice is recorded for the record. Following the public meeting, the panel will adjourn and deliberate, and our decisions will be published on the council's website, usually within 3 working days of tonight. So we'll move on to the items. We're going to change the order. Because item 2, which is Caldwell Avenue Reserve, and item 3, which is Walker Street, Helensburg, I think are going to be relatively straightforward in comparison to Market Street, because I know that the panel's got a number of questions we want to ask the design team that's here. So we'll start with item 2, Caldwell Avenue Reserve, 85 Meadow Street, Tarrawonna. It's an application for additions to the existing Salvation Army Hall. It's submitted to the panel for determination because it is council-owned land, so obviously that creates a conflict and prevents the council from determining the application itself. Panel's had a look at the site. We've looked at the report. We've looked at the plans. We have no issues with what's being proposed, Sir, you're from the Salvation Army. Did you want to address the panel, or are you... You're fine? Okay. So we'll make our decision tonight, and that'll be published on the Council's website within 2 or 3 days. So just keep an eye on the website. But as I say, if we had some issues, we would have asked you to come up and respond to them. Thank you. Move on to item 3, 65 to 67 Walker Street, Helensburg, which is a mixed development. We have registered Amy Sutherland, the planner, and Trent Luck, the owner, who are attending to answer any questions we may have. So are there any questions that we wanted to ask the team there? Yes, Tina?
I've just got one question, and you might have to actually come up to the plans.
Yeah. Could you both come up? Just grab another chair there. Make sure the blue light's on that microphone.
You can come up here. I just had a question.
Okay. That's
Is that
fine.
All right?
Yeah, that's fine.
Just had a question with this unit on level zero, and it's got private open space, and then it's got a raised garden bed, and this is raised. But it's not clear how you get access up to there, or whether you do get access, or how it all works. So that's communal, is it?
That's communal. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
a landscape buffer between that space.
So this raised garden bed, will that be communal as well?
No.
Yeah, because it just says raised, so we just weren't. Well, I wasn't sure how it worked. That was all. It's not a major issue. I just didn't understand how it worked.
You know, that would be a garden bed.
Yep.
That would be higher than down there. That would be a garden bed just for that, solely for that unit.
That's what the section suggests.
Yeah.
Maybe about 900 or something.
Yes. Yeah.
So the unit owner will manage that garden bed, and then the bit behind is communal. Is that how it
yes.
works?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Yes.
Okay. That's fine. That's fine. I saw the section earlier. All right. Thank you.
Any other questions? No? Okay. Thanks very much. Thanks for attending. Again, the panel's decision will be published on the Council's website within 3 working days. So that completes your item. Thanks for attending. Okay, item 1, which is 80 to 82 Market Street, Wollongong, commercial development. We probably would like to hear from Robert Gizzi and Luke Rollinson, I think. And did you have something prepared? Or there's just some things that we want to discuss. And okay. And the two, you're all with the one team, the two gentlemen behind as well? Yeah, that's good. Okay, sorry. Come up. And that's the reason why we reversed the items. Obviously, we knew that the other two were going to be quick, but I think it's much more productive if we're having almost a one-on-one discussion when there's some issues that we want to work through.
No worries. Okay.
So don't be too concerned, but there's a number of issues that we just want to work through with you and look at how they may be resolved.
Yep, okay.
Stephen, did you want to start off with this? Just turn your mic on, sorry.
We're just a little bit concerned about the application of the 12-metre separation rule above street wall height, and we appreciate that there's been some variation to that control in its application by council over the years. And we note that you've addressed that in terms of the zero lot line on the western side. But there's also a question on the eastern side, is there not, which hasn't been, or doesn't seem to have been addressed specifically, certainly in the variation requests.
Okay.
But more broadly, in terms of the urban design rationale behind the form that you've adopted there.
Yeah.
So Yes, we appreciate that there's been some considerable discretion exercised by council, but why is it that both of those separations shouldn't apply in this case? You know, it's not clear to us, I don't think, generally, why it's a better urban design outcome on the one hand, and two, whether you've made adequate justification for both sides.
Okay.
In terms of the variation request.
Yeah. So to put simply, in terms of adequate justification, I think that's one thing that I personally, in our justification, we haven't considered the Kira Lane building separation criteria against that clause.
Is there a reason for
that? And that must have just been an oversight in relation to applicability across a public road versus an adjoining boundary there. So I can't say I've ever applied it across a public road before. But if you strictly read the clause in the way that you're suggesting, then maybe it does apply and needs to be addressed.
Talks
but the reason,
neighbouring, neighbouring building.
Yeah, so that's the reason why it wasn't addressed. In that respect, across the public roadway. In terms of...
Well, it's a laneway, isn't it?
Laneway, sorry, yes.
So it's about a 6-metre-wide lane is the way I assess it, approximately.
Yeah. Yes, that's fair call, yep. In terms of, I guess, the rationale behind the design, there are a few things that come into play regarding, I guess, the need for the built-to-boundary type effect that we have on this site. The main things, I guess, we went to the design review panel voluntary in this process.
Because I think that's an admirable thing, let me say.
Yeah, it is a difficult site. Yep. It is constrained in some respects by a future laneway that we have to the north, two existing boundary street frontages, and an existing adjoining building that is underdeveloped under current planning scheme, but it's quite a spectacular old building, if you want to call it that. That's, in my view, it has enough improvement. It's probably unlikely to be redeveloped in the next 20 to 30 years. Mm. So we're isolated in some respects. We then have the need to develop a scheme that provides very efficient open floor plates for office. The city over the last decade has really lacked good functional large office floor plates in their buildings, and it's only recently where we're seeing that GFA come online. In the next 9 months, we'll have 10,000 square metres of good floor plates come to the market, which is the first time in a decade that we've had good A-grade office space. So this is complementary to that effect. We then have the need to have a lift core, and where that lift core is positioned affects those considerations. So we went to the design review panel with three options, and one was lift core in the current position, lift core centralised, and then lift core to Kira Lane itself in a very glazed type theme, transparent type theme. The option two for a centralised lift core had a lot of difficulties in terms of basement configurations, but also floor plate efficiencies in the way we considered that. The panel was concerned about option two to present that lift core to the street, and it was desired, I guess the outcome was option three, lift core to the edge. And on the basis of lift core to the western edge, we automatically have that linear form that is unable to be stepped in from an urban design perspective. So we then moved forward with the process. At the design review panel, we presented a street frontage height that wouldn't have clause 4.6 apply to the western building. It was actually another level higher. Okay, through the process, it was akin to the ridge height of the Hotel Illawarra. Okay, and through the assessment process of the pre-DA with council and the heritage officer, and the DA assessment process, that street wall height sort of got set at a story below. So essentially, what If it was a four-storey street height, it wouldn't be applying to the western edge, not the Illawarra Hotel Illawarra side, but the western edge. It wouldn't have a clause 4.6. It was brought down to match and be very similar to the brickwork height of the Hotel Illawarra to have that continual form, and it was felt that that continual form should also wrap around the edge of Kira Lane and have good interface with the Hotel Illawarra. So,
I think just to add to that point as well, the idea about that datum point on Market Street and how that wrapped around down the laneway and how that datum became consistent and it sort of wrapped around the corner. As well as the strengthening of that potential.
The relationship to the eve of the hotel, is it?
Very close to the eve.
And how that data, how that brickwork element actually ran through, and then how we actually were able to make the upper levels lightweight and make that more transitional as far as appearance. And what was also, we've got a heritage architect here tonight as well, discuss that as well. Now, what was important is when you look at when it's been viewed at certain aspects of certain areas around Market Street and beyond, as far as how the building recesses back. And how when you're further up Market Street, you don't actually, the hotel actually hides part of the building, so it's discreet, it's hidden, and we thought that was a fair response contextually around the site. And also by the use of the strong brickwork base, respecting the Illawarra Hotel, the quality of materials and the use of the steel framing above there to give it's lightweight, but it still gives a respect to the actual heritage building adjacent. And I might let Paul, did you want to actually touch on that experience?
Okay. Yeah, and I guess just in leaning to that, when you I guess the experience that we thought by having a hard edge street wall to Kira Lane is that you would really notice that the base of that brickwork, and you wouldn't so much notice that upper level two levels that are corresponding above that in terms of why we didn't have a setback to that street frontage. Again, to look at the floor plate as well and have a setback to the street frontage. We again compress our available floor plates for those levels. The design and the development is well and under the FSR and the height in that respect.
The choice of material, I think there's a whole strong emphasis on the quality of brickwork, the quality of detailing around the windows, the corbelling of the brickwork, as well as the use of steel framing, which is it's quite an expensive and superior material. Which we need to work with our heritage architect on, but there was a lot of thought put into the materiality of the building and the quality of those materials to exhibit also design excellence.
Yeah. And I guess in terms of the clause 4.6 and addressing the relationship with the Hotel Illawarra frontage, so to street frontage height, we're already above the eave of the Hotel Illawarra, and there's a question, I guess, in my mind as to how much of the rest of the building actually applies to that edge as well. I think my understanding on adjoining buildings, if we go over the existing height of that building, then no longer does that clause 4.6 come into part. I'm not sure. That's something that's the way I've been treated, and I think that's the way council have assessed it. But happy to look at whatever needs happen there.
So. It is a very cumbersome clause to work through. Mm. And I know when I was reading the report, I was going through the report, I was looking for the diagram that was going to tell me how this control works.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find it because it doesn't exist. Mm. I think we've all got a better understanding now than what we did earlier today about how it works, but it would still be good to see it spelt out.
Yep.
Very clearly. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Stephen.
Yeah, and I think it's important in the 4.6 not to just simply extol the virtues of the development as a whole. And this is more or less verbatim from initial action in Malara, the Chief Judge's judgment. It needs to say why the variation of the control itself provides better environmental planning grounds, not just the virtues of the development as a whole. Mm-hmm. So I think that could strengthen your argument if you can deal with that.
Yep. Yep. And look, just in relation to that, some of the things that you've said this afternoon, Robert, would sit well in a 4.6 when you've talked about how the when you've talked about building materials and how the building sits on the site, and the fact that you've used, it reads as a lightweight structure above a certain height, all of those things start to become environmental planning grounds for justification. And I guess that's not what we're not seeing enough of that in the submissions that have been put forward.
Yep.
I mean, don't take our comments as negative criticisms.
Mm-hmm.
I think on the whole, it's quite a reasonable response to the site.
Yep.
But I think the panel needs to... the panel has a duty to make sure that, obviously, every box is ticked
all the appropriate
from
matters
a statutory point of view.
Yep. Yep. Mm.
And I think also, as part of the 4.6, what would be good to see would be how this fits in the context. And again, you've explained it quite well tonight.
Yeah.
But it's not clear in the document, not set out in the documentation.
Yeah.
It's almost like a bit of a mini urban design review of that precinct.
Precinct, yeah.
And a justification, and showing how this design fits within that.
Yep.
While it's strongly determined by the immediate neighbours, the hotel and the Catholic building, how does it resolve itself with the broader context
yeah.
Market Street? It seems that the drivers have been the two immediately adjoining buildings, the great drivers of that design.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah. All right. Look, I think it's pretty clear that the panel's heading towards deferring this tonight, and that's what we will do.
Yep.
You've heard our comments tonight, and we'll make it very clear in our reasons for deferral.
Yep.
It's really a matter for you to go back and just address those things.
Yep.
Come back to the panel, and once the panel can be satisfied as it needs to be, particularly in terms of clause 4.6.
Mm-hmm.
All should be well.
Yep, okay, all right. Is there a way, process-wise, that could be done electronically with the panel rather than present?
Yes, it could be. That's a good suggestion, rather than hold you up.
Yep.
And I think we could convene the same panel electronically once the information's provided and determine it that way. And that will save time, obviously.
Yep. Okay.
Save your whole team having to come out to a meeting.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
And we'll note that in our decision tonight.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cheers, guys.
All right. Well, that concludes the agenda for tonight, and that concludes the meeting. So thank you very much for your attendance. And the meeting is closed at 5:22.